You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Monday, June 21st, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we are officially into summer. Summer is upon us in Baltimore, and the weather getting warmer, the days are longer, but for the Orioles, the days seem even longer sometimes when they have losses, especially like the one on Saturday. But we're going to recap the entire weekend on this episode, give you the three big takeaways from the Orioles weekend series against the Toronto Blue Jays, in which the Orioles lost two out of three, winning the Friday game, then losing in really crushing fashion Saturday, and then losing the Father's Day game Sunday as Toronto came in and took two out of three. So again, we'll give you the three big takeaways having to do with some positives on the starting pitching side for the Orioles, a couple of guys who just couldn't stop hitting home runs over the weekend, and then a player the Orioles have gotten back from injury who could be a trade piece but just isn't looking like himself. So that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is actually brought to you by another podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That is Locked On MLB. Join walking baseball encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, but please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past. Featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis of the day's biggest stories, Locked On MLB is the single best source for daily baseball talk. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. So we start with the three big takeaways from the Orioles weekend, as again, they lose two out of three to the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, the win on Friday did at least snap a long losing streak, but they're right back into another streak. And with the two losses on the weekend, Orioles now 23-48 through 71 games this season. They do win on Friday 7-1, then they fall 10-7 on Saturday and lose the finale 7-4 on Sunday. So we get to the three big takeaways. And the first one, we will go to the positive side. It has to do with the starting pitching. And that, you know, at the very least, the Orioles starters on Friday and Saturday, Thomas Eshelman and Dean Kramer, and even for a bit, Matt Harvey on Sunday, gave us some really, really positive signs on the mound for the O's. Now, we start with Thomas Eshelman on Friday. Now, this was a little bit of a surprise to us because in the afternoon on Friday, the Orioles actually added Thomas Eshelman to the 40-man roster and called him up to make the start because, you know, in the afternoon, they added Bruce Zimmerman to the 10-day injury list. Now, we didn't really know Bruce was going through any injury. He didn't leave his last start with any kind of injury. He was, you know, still scheduled to start the Friday night game. And then on Friday, the Orioles add him to the IL. So not sure what exactly is going on there with Bruce Zimmerman. Hopefully it is a quick fix because, you know, right now he has probably been the Orioles' second best starter behind John Means. And it looks like the Orioles' top two starters, Means and Zimmerman, are on the injury list right now. We learned that John Means may not be back until around the All-Star break, so a few more weeks without him and without Zimmerman, things could get ugly in the pitching rotation. So enter Thomas Eshelman, who had not pitched in a game for the Orioles so far in 2021, as he had spent the year in AAA Norfolk, and he gets added to the 40-man. And what the Orioles did do to make room was DFA Chance Sisko. And that is obviously a big move the Orioles made, but is something we will address on tomorrow's episode. But here today, you know, they make room for Thomas Eshelman. And I got to say, he did better than I expected. And I'll take the start that he gave the Orioles on Friday night. Now, he only goes 4 2/3 innings, so he didn't get too deep into the game, but he pitched well, just one run allowed on three hits. He struck out three and walked one. The only run that he allowed was the only run the Orioles allowed on the day. It was a fifth inning solo homer hit with one out by Lourdes Gurriel that tied the game at one in the top of the fifth. He did allow a couple more base runners in that inning, but Tyler Wells came in, got a big out to get out of a jam, and the Orioles took the lead in the bottom of the fifth and did not look back in that one. But you know, I will take what Eshelman gave the Orioles. And we know he has, you know, many limitations on his stuff. His fastball, you know, was averaging, actually, you know, 88, which is kind of up for Thomas Eshelman, to be honest. You know, he hit 90.1 with that fastball. You're usually not expecting that. So velocity was a little bit up and was still 88.3 on the day. And, you know, he threw about 51% fastballs and he threw 26% sliders and then dropped in some changeups and some curveballs as well. And, you know, none of the pitches were amazing. He had 25% CSW throughout the day. All four of his whiffs did come on his slider, only had four whiffs in the 57 pitches that he threw. And he wasn't amazing, but, you know, he held the Blue Jays down. He had Randall Grichuk have an ofer, which is almost impossible when he's facing the Orioles. And you know what? You'll take it, what you got from Thomas Eshelman. Then you move, you know, to Saturday. And frankly, we probably got the best Dean Kramer start of the season so far. Dean goes out there looking to build on a couple of solid starts before it, and you know, again, probably has his best one of the year. Six innings for Dean Kramer. He was the first Oriole to complete six innings in the month of June so far. He allows just two runs on three hits, strikes out six, walks three, did allow two home runs, but those were the only runs that he allowed. He allowed two solo home runs in the top of the first inning. Marcus Semien hit a pitch, that a 3-2 fastball that was in on the hands. Don't know how he hit that ball out for a solo shot to lead off the game. And then a couple batters later, he did throw a fastball down the middle to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who hit it out to dead center to make it 2-0. But after those two runs in the first, Dean Kramer settled down, gave five consecutive scoreless innings for the Orioles, and he was pretty fantastic out there on the mound for Kramer. You kind of look what he did. You know, he threw about 53% four-seamers, 26% cutters, and then he just kind of tossed the changeup and the curveball in there. And, you know, he had a great day with that cutter. That was his pitch. You know, we've talked again and again about how he's trying to make that cutter his go-to pitch, his strikeout pitch, and he did it. The pitch had a 39% CSW. Five of his seven whiffs on the day on Saturday came from that cutter. He also had four called strikes with the cutter, got five foul balls. It was really, really good, that pitch. And, you know, it was really interesting where he put it. You know, watching that start, you felt like he was almost pitching like most guys with cutters don't pitch against lefties. You know, when you have a good cutter, obviously the guy you think of is Mariano Rivera, but there are plenty of other guys who throw a good cutter. Jake Arrieta, we know, in his prime, they would really try to jam that cutter in on lefties and then maybe try to backdoor it from time to time. But what Dean Kramer did was, you know, not only did he backdoor it, but he backdoored it high. He was throwing a high cutter to lefties, and it was working. That's how he got a lot of swings and misses and helped him get the six strikeouts. It was kind of an interesting approach you don't see a lot of guys go with, but it worked for Dean Kramer, and this is really something to build on for Dean, and especially with Zimmerman and Means out, they're going to need a guy like Dean Kramer to step up, and he did just that. Now, of course, we go to Sunday, and this was the worst start of the three with Matt Harvey, who, at the end of the day, did have another rough outing. He was 4-3, allowing four runs on nine hits, four strikeouts, two walks. He threw 84 pitches. His ERA now 7.80 on the season. But there were definitely some positives for Matt Harvey. Like, in most of his innings, he got the first two batters out. Now, first inning, he gets the first two guys out, then loads the bases, then gets a huge strikeout to put up a zero in the first. Then he kind of settled down after that. And what was really good for Harvey, and, you know, even though he ended up giving up, you know, all the runs in the fifth, you know, he was through four scoreless, and then the Blue Jays score four runs on him in the fifth inning with one out. You know, Adam Plutko has to come in. He can't even get through Harvey Kant the fifth inning. But what I really liked from Matt Harvey was that slider. And really, you know, his fastball was getting crushed like it has been all season. Now, you know, he was up around 97 a few times. The velocity was good, but that pitch just got hammered again. The pitch I really liked was that slider. He threw 23 of them. That was good for 27% of his pitches. He got 7 of his 10 whiffs on the day on that slider. Got a couple of called strikes on that pitch as well. And that slider, it really looked different than it has all year. Its average velocity was at 88 miles an hour. That's up from the year-long average of about 86. He threw it as hard as 90 on the day. It was almost kind of a Jacob deGrom-esque slider, obviously not with the effectiveness, but just with how hard he was throwing it. It had a lot tighter spin, tighter break, you know, almost looked like an extended cutter, which, you know, kind of DeGrom's slider looks like at times. And the 39% CSW was big for him. And, you know, I believe all of his strikeouts came on that cutter, or that slider, I should say, that kind of looked like a cutter at times. But that was something to build off for Matt Harvey. And I know the start wasn't good again, but it was honestly much, much better than his last three or four starts. And I got to tell you, coming off of that, seeing what he could do with the slider, if they can try and fix that fastball, I can tell you one thing. I guarantee you in 5 days, Matt Harvey is going to be starting again. He is at least, you know, being able to keep himself in this starting rotation. But, you know, the pitching, at least the starting pitching, really wasn't the issue for the Orioles losing 2 of 3. And there were a couple guys in the lineup who also, frankly, were not the issue. Actually, really three guys who kind of been the Orioles' offensive stars for most of the season. They all shine pretty bright this weekend. We'll talk about that coming up after the break. We'll get back to our Orioles weekend series recap in just a second, but first, dinner time can be chaotic. But with Freshly, it's easy. Their chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week and take the pressure off you. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door with no cooking required. Ordering is easy. Visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. And now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living Freshly. So right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/lockedon. So stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/lockedon for $40 off your first two orders. Again, that's Freshly.com/lockedon for $40 off your first two orders. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by Wealthfront. Decades of data show that investors that trade individual stocks underperform the market every year. In fact, only 1% of day traders beat the market. The odds are not in your favor if you're doing it alone. So team up with Wealthfront instead. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. There's no manual trades, no picking stocks, and no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle it all. And Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. So to get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, again, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's WEALTHFRONT.com/lockedonMLB to start growing your savings. One more time, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB and get started today. So the Orioles got some surprisingly good starting pitching from Thomas Eshelman and Dean Kramer and even Matt Harvey for a little bit over the weekend. But, you know, the guys who really stole the show over the weekend when the Orioles were playing well throughout the entire game on Friday and up until the ninth inning on Saturday was some of these hitters. And, you know, frankly, what a weekend it was. I mean, let's start with Friday. Cedric Mullins is just on another level. If he is not in Denver, Colorado in mid-July playing in the All-Star game, then, you know, we might have to fly some people out to Denver to stage some sort of sit-in there. Because, I mean, he's the best outfielder in the American League right now. I mean, he is leading all American League center fielders in every single offensive category. It helps that Mike Trout has been on the IL for most of the season. And, you know, he'd probably be second in most categories if Trout's healthy. But guess what? Trout's not, and he's probably not going to be in the All-Star game because he's barely played this year. So enter Cedric Mullins, who is 10th in AL outfield all-star voting and should be first, to be honest. 3-for-4 Friday, 2 homers, 4 RBIs, including a curtain call. Now, you know, he kind of did it both ways, which was great, too. He leads off the game with a solo homer in the first to give the Orioles a 1-0 lead. Then he puts the game away in the 8th with a 3-run shot that made it 7-1, which ended up being the final score in that one. And, I mean, you know, he's just hitting with this power we haven't seen from him. And, you know, those two homers gave him, or, you know, later on Saturday, I should say, he took over the team home run lead on Saturday at one point till Trey Mancini took it back over, which we'll talk about in a sec. But, I mean, the power and even the hits he's getting, you know, hitting .322 and, you know, the OPS up over 900 and, you know, leading the league in hits and all, you know, all these defensive metrics, stealing bases and everything with Cedric Mullins. You know, you never thought the power numbers would be like this, but here we are with Cedric Mullins, and it's just unbelievable to see. And obviously he had the big day on Friday and he got the curtain call in the 8th inning. You know, the Orioles scored 5 in the 8th to put that game away on Friday night, and he got the curtain call after the 3-1 run homer, and frankly, he deserved it. And then, you know, you move to Saturday and he does it again. 2-for-5 with 2 more home runs, each of these solo shots for Cedric Mullins. And it's just incredible what he continues to do for the Orioles. See, it's 2 more homers on the day. And you know what? At the plate, it was funny. You know, his other 3 at-bats were all strikeouts in the 2-for-5, but he hits 2 solo homers to help the Orioles, you know, build their lead on Saturday. And it was just fantastic to see for Cedric Mullins. Then you turn it around, and oh yeah, here comes Ryan Mountcastle with a 4-for-4 day with 3 homers and 4 RBIs. I mean, Mountcastle was ridiculous. Of course, his first 3-homer game, he was the first Orioles rookie to hit 3 homers in a game. game since Nick Markakis all the way back in 2006. But I mean, Mountcastle in the month of June has been on fire. Even, you know, really late in May and into June has been back to the hitter that he was for most of 2020. And, you know, his offensive stats are creeping up there near the other guys on the team. I mean, he's kind of creeping up to Trey Mancini in production right now because Trey, you know, had been in a little bit of a slump. But just unbelievable, Mountcastle and Mullins. Then Mountcastle, after his third run, he gets the curtain call late in the game on Saturday. And of course, you know, it all does not work out for the Orioles. They go into the ninth with the 7-4 lead. They bring in Paul Fry for his second save chance. He loads the bases, gets two outs, you know, issues a walk to drive in a run at 7-5. And Brandon Hyde goes to Tyler Wells, which, you know, I agreed with. Give him the shot. He hadn't given up a run in June. He'd been great. You know, he gives up the two-run single, a couple of doubles. All of a sudden, it's a six-run ninth, and the Blue Jays win at 10-7. And that hurt, obviously, because it was a fun day at the yard for eight innings, and then it all fell apart in the ninth. But, you know, still a fun day. You know, Mountcastle still hit three homers. Cedric Mullins still hit two homers. You know, DJ Stewart went yard the game as well. Orioles hit six home runs for the first time since 2016. It was still a fun day at the yard on Saturday. And, you know, Mullins and Mountcastle are just red hot. But, you know, I mentioned there was a third hitter, and I mentioned Trey Mancini because he's been in a little bit of a mini slump. You know, not a full-fledged slump. He's still been hitting, but just been a little bit of a mini slump. Well, he breaks out of that on Sunday. And even though the Orioles do lose the game, Trey Mancini got in on the long ball. He hits a solo home run in the first to give the Orioles a 1-0 lead. Then he hits a two-run homer in the eighth to bring the Orioles closer. They had a three-run eighth to cut it to a 6-4 game in the game on Sunday. Goes 2-for-4 with the two homers, three RBIs, and did not strike out on the day. And, you know, the weather's heating up, and the ball is flying out of Camden Yards. And just what a weekend for the Orioles' top three hitters. And Mullins has been great. Mancini's been great. And, you know, the lineup construction was interesting in the game on Sunday because for the first time, you know, really this season, it was Mullins 1, Mancini 2, and Mountcastle 3. And, you know, I think that's going to be the lineup construction for a little while here from Brandon Hyde because those guys are just on fire. You know, we had seen Freddie Galvis hitting 2 and 3 because his bat had been heating up. You know, it has cooled down a little bit. He's still been solid so far. We'll see him around there. But I like the Mullins, Mancini, Mountcastle right now. They're crushing the ball. They are looking great at the plate. Keep them in those spots. And again, it really does hurt after that Saturday game with the five home runs combined by Mountcastle and Mullins that the Orioles did not win, and they give up six runs in the ninth, and that really hurts. But it doesn't, you know, change the fact that Mountcastle hit three homers. It doesn't change the fact that Cedric Mullins had back-to-back games with two home runs. Cedric Mullins, back-to-back games with two home runs. It's just, it's unbelievable, and it's fun to watch despite the Orioles not winning a whole lot of baseball games. But, you know, we are going to end with something on the less positive side. And I mentioned, you know, the little bit of a lineup change, and what that did was actually move Anthony Santander down in the lineup. He, you know, had been hitting second or third for most of the season when he was healthy, but he actually hit fifth in the lineup in Friday's game, and he hit fourth in the game on Sunday. And, you know, Anthony Santander did play a key role in the game Saturday, but not on the good side. And also, frankly, you know, he didn't have much of a weekend at all at the plate, just had one hit. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about Santander, just something not looking right from him since he returned from the injury. That's coming up after this. So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar and the 9 delicious flavors like raspberry, mint brownie, salted caramel, and my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. Now I know many of you have tried the Built Bars and have your favorite flavor. That's not the case yet though. You can go to BuiltBar.com and you can order a mixed box. That's right, you can get 2 of each of the 9 flavors, and then I'm certain you'll be able to pick your favorite. But here's the thing, you know, you're eating these Built Bars, you're tasting the flavors, they taste like a candy bar, but they're good for you. They are healthy too. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. So order today to get the raspberry or mint brownie or whatever you like. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So we talked about Cedric Mullins, Trey Mancini, Ryan Mountcastle crushing the ball. And, you know, when you talked about guys coming into the season hitting well, we didn't really maybe think it would be, you know, Cedric Mullins. You didn't know what you would get from Mancini. We thought it would be Mountcastle, but somebody you felt like you could pencil in to be a good producer was Anthony Santander because of the great 2020 season he had before the oblique injury. And, you know, he was hitting solid this year before he had that, you know, ankle injury in Miami that kept him out for a while, but the Orioles got him back and, you know, you slot him right back into the middle of the lineup. But, you know, things have just not been amazing for Anthony Santander since he returned from that injury. He's just been kind of a different player. He basically missed a month. He got injured April 20th in Miami. He returned on May 21st against the Nationals. So basically, you know, he missed about a month of baseball. And when he returned, he was actually hitting the ball really, really well. You know, throughout May, he had a really, really good month of May, ended up hitting .341 in May, and was really, really productive. Only had one home run, was spraying the ball across the ballpark. He had seven doubles. But then the month of June came, and, you know, he started off, you know, the first few games in June hot. But since then, he has just been ice cold at the plate for the Orioles. His last multi-hit game for Anthony Santander, you have to go all the way back to June 8th against the Mets when he had a 2-for-4. And since that game, it has been a struggle for Santander at the plate. Since that June 8th game, so this starts in the June 9th game against the Mets, he is 5 for his last 40 at the dish. That is a .125 batting average. Overall in June, in 68 plate appearances, he's hitting just .206 with a .250 on base, has just one home run and four doubles in the month. And, you know, frankly, you know, you want to say that he hasn't looked the same since the ankle injury, but it's not really that simple because he was so good, you know, for the first 2 weeks plus right when he came off the injured list. He was swinging a very hot bat, you know, especially late in May. But, you know, after a good kind of first week of June, it's just been a disaster since then for Santander. He had only one hit over the weekend for the Orioles, ended up with a 1-for-11 at the dish, did draw a walk as well in the series, but ended up striking out three times as well. And, you know, all of a sudden you look up at Santander and on the season, you know, the average down to .239, just a .657 OPS for the Orioles switch hitting outfielder. And, you know, he was DHing in the game Sunday. They had, you know, Mountcastle in left, Mullins in center, and Hayes in right. And, you know, most of the time you're going to want Santander in the outfield in that group. He is a much better outfielder when healthy than Ryan Mountcastle. He gives you better defense, even if he's out there in left or, you know, if he's in right and Hayes is in left. But, you know, what we saw in that game Saturday is, you know, it's not just the offense that is slumping. It looks like his ankle is not all there. And Brandon Hyde has even said it. You know, he doesn't think Santander is at 100% right now on that ankle. And we saw it in the ninth inning after, you know, Paul Fry left with the bases loaded. They turned it over to Tyler Wells, two down, bases loaded, Orioles leading 7-5 with Bo Bichette at the plate. And Bichette and Wells had a great battle in that at bat. And on the eighth pitch, Bichette kind of fights off a little looper into shallow right field, and Santander was coming in. And, you know, it looked like a ball he would have caught, but he was just a step too slow because of that ankle, and he dove, the ball ticked off his glove, just couldn't make the catch. The two runs scored to tie the game. Then, of course, the very next batter, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., drives in two more with a double. Blue Jays take the lead, don't look back, and they win that Saturday game. Again, that felt like the whole day that the Orioles were going to win the game and take the first two in the series. And now it's becoming a big thing because also Santander has grounded into, I believe, four double plays in the last week. And even when he hits the ball on the ground, you can tell he's just not getting up the line as well as he has in the past. And you have to think that ankle might be bothering him again. And it could be a case of where, you know, he came off the injured list late in May, early June, those first 2 or 3 weeks off the IL. Ankle was feeling good again. He was playing well on it, but maybe it wasn't 100% healed. And as he went through baseball activities, 3 weeks of the grind of baseball, it started to wear down maybe on that ankle again, and now it's starting to deteriorate a little bit. He was just a step too slow on that fly ball. It was a ball he probably would have usually caught, and he just couldn't get to it. And, you know, it changed from an Orioles win to a tie game and eventually an Orioles loss there in that ninth inning. And, you know, when he's doing that and he's also not producing at the plate, it's making you think, you know, will he need to go back on the injured list at some point? Again, a 5-for-40 stretch is not good for Santander. And, you know, the other thing that comes into play here, again, he's 26. Orioles have control of him still for a while now, but he was kind of the sexy pick for an Orioles trade chip here in 2021, you know, for people that needed an outfielder. We did a whole episode about a month ago about, you know, all the White Sox injuries in their outfield. They're trying to win a World Series, how, you know, Santander may be a perfect piece for the White Sox to add to their outfield. right now, you know, he's not really a trade chip at all. He's looking injured. He's not hitting the defense. You know, after he was a Gold Glove finalist in right field in 2020, had all those great offensive numbers, the offensive down, and he's not fielding well here in 2021. And, you know, all of that stuff has kind of gone to the wayside, and it's not so much about trading Santander now. It's about, you know, can the Orioles get back to 2020 Santander? And that was the worry as well, that, you know, even though he hit so well, played so well, it was only a 37-game sample size. He had a pretty good 2019, but he only played in 93 games that year too. We still haven't seen a full season of Santander, and we won't even get it this year because he's already missed a month, and it looks like at some point he's going to have to go back on the IL. So I'm a little worried about Anthony Santander at this point, and we're just going to have to see, you know, if he does, you know, go on the IL. Obviously, the Orioles would probably call up Ryan McKenna again. You know, it could give them a chance as well to get Yusniel Diaz into the majors. You know, he is now back from his injury, was on rehab last week with the Bowie Bay Sox. He has now today been returned to the Norfolk Tide, so he'll be back in AAA and trying to get himself finally to the big leagues. So there will be guys knocking on the door, you know, for an outfield spot if the Orioles do have to put Santander on the IL. And it just might have to happen at this point because he is not looking like at all the same player he was last year, and, you know, especially showed on that play in the ninth inning Saturday. I think that ankle might be still bothering the Orioles right fielder. But that's it for the three takeaways today. Of course, the Orioles do lose 2 out of 3 against the Toronto Blue Jays. Again, now 23-48 on the season. But they are right back at it here tonight. They will stay at home at Camden Yards, and they are facing the Houston Astros. Astros come into Camden Yards with fans in attendance for the first time since the trash can banging scheme. Really everybody figured it out and learned about it. And so we'll see how the fans treat the Astros. But a 7:05 p.m. Eastern time start in game 1 of 3 between Houston and Baltimore. Jake Odorizzi is going to get the start for Houston. The 31-year-old right-hander who signed with the Astros this season came off the IL a few weeks ago, but his last start was a short one, but he was good against Texas on June 15th. 4 scoreless innings, 2 hits, no walks, 3 Ks. He's actually kind of been piggybacking with Lance McCullers at times. Doesn't look like that'll happen tonight, and it looks like Odorizzi could be stretched out. Overall on the season, he's made 7 appearances, has a 5.68 ERA in 25 1/3 innings. Again, has spent a good amount of time on the injured list. He is going to square off against the Orioles' 26-year-old left-hander Keegan Aiken, who's going to make his 9th appearance of the year. Aiken with a 5.76 ERA in 29 2/3 innings this year. He has 27 strikeouts. Coming off a last start, which was really, really interesting in Cleveland, it was actually his longest start of the year at 5 2/3 innings, but it was also the most runs he's given up. Allowed 8 runs on 8 hits, struck out 7, and walked 3. The 7 strikeouts was also a season high for Aiken. It was a very weird start where he gave up a lot of runs early, then he kind of rolled until the 6th, and he gave up some more runs in the 6th as well. Kind of an odd start, but we'll see if Aiken can, you know, get length tonight, but also maybe not give up 8 runs. So we'll be back with you here on the pod tomorrow to recap game 1 between the Orioles and the Astros. We're going to talk about the Chance Cisco DFA. It finally came over the weekend. Talk about what that means for Chance and what it means for the Orioles. And then we'll talk a little bit of minor leagues on the podcast tomorrow. Orioles made a lot of minor league moves this weekend, including promoting Gunnar Henderson finally to high A, among many other moves. We'll break those down on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.